Welcome to Rule Breakers for Gender Equality. My name is Nancy Polian, and I'm on a mission to make the top of the business world more diverse and inclusive. Because to me, rule breaking is all about taking a risk. The risk to be yourself and to create your own career path. In 2021, there were more CEOs named Peter than women CEOs in the Netherlands. This is one of the rules that I want to break. Let's see which business leader is breaking the rules today. So I'm here today with Corinne Aron. Is it Aron or Aaron?
Aaron.
Aaron! It's good that I'm asking because I was pronouncing it the Dutch way, right? Who is the chief marketing officer here at Link & Co. And I'm actually in the beautiful Link & Co. building. I think you've got a name for this building. What is it called?
It's just the Link & Co. Club.
The club. In Amsterdam. Yeah. It's a very cool club. I'm already buying stuff. I'm leaving with some new Link & Co. luggage, some branded luggage. And the reason I wanted to talk to you is because you held such an amazing story. I mean, you told your story at Amplifier last year in November 2022, and it resonated with a lot of people, a lot of women in the audience. And I think, you know, it's a story that more people need to hear. So that's why we're having this conversation today. And Corinne is always like, what are you going to ask me? She's very strict with me, but I'm going to surprise her because I'm going to start with a very Surinamese question because you're like me from the Caribbean. You were born in the Caribbean from the beautiful island of Trinidad and Tobago. And so tell me about who you are. I mean, we always say, who's your father? Who's your mother?
Yeah.
That's the first thing because we want to find out if we're related, right? Do they have that in Trinidad?
Yes.
Because it's a small island.
Everybody knows everybody.
Yes.
That's what we say. So I came from a small beach town in Trinidad and Tobago. And that's where my parents still live today. I always say there was just one traffic light, no cinemas, no fancy malls, nothing much for us to do, actually. No fancy restaurants when I lived there. And I actually just returned from a short vacation there with my parents where I spent
time. You were there for Christmas?
I was there for Christmas. So actually, the life that I live today is quite different than how I grew up, how my parents would have imagined life for me, how I would have imagined life for myself. I moved to the US in 2020.
So why?
Sorry, in 2000.
In 2000, that's 23 years ago.
Yeah, 23 years ago.
So but tell me, if you didn't imagine living the life that you're living now, what made you go to the US?
In those days, I knew that I wanted to study marketing. So I've been in marketing all my life. I knew that I wanted to study marketing. And actually, there's only one university in the Caribbean, and it's one of the campuses is in Trinidad, the University of the West Indies. That's where my father went. That's where my sister went. But I knew that I wanted to study marketing. So I knew that I had to leave the country, actually.
Yeah. So did you get a scholarship?
I did get an academic scholarship, yes.
So that means you had really high grades. It's a smart lady I'm sitting in front of.
Thanks.
So going from a beach town where there's nothing, and then you arrive, which town in America?
I studied in a small town called Orangeburg, South Carolina. And the funny thing is, once I got there, I said to myself, no, this is not the life for me. And I wanted to do my studies as quickly as I possibly could so that I could get back to the life that I had in Trinidad, which was actually quite a fun life. And I then decided that I was going to do my four-year degree in 3 years. So I doubled up on all of my credits and my coursework.
So that's no social life for you.
There was no social life in that town. I graduated within 3 years, and I had a perfect GPA, so 4.0 out of 4.0. So that was quite an accomplishment that I'm proud of, but I would say I was actually quite an average student.
Yeah, and then you started looking for a job in Trinidad?
Then my plans changed because I got a job in the US.
Did you apply for one, or was it offered to you?
That's a good question. So I said to the audience when I spoke at Amplify Her that my kind of life mantra is take a chance.
Yes, take a
chance.
And
one of the things that, you know, is an example of that is really that when I was at university, there were these programs for minorities, which would help minorities in the U.S. As you know, that there is a race disparity issue in the U.S. And in many countries, obviously. But there was a program that helped minorities, and I applied for it, and it was a very low barrier to entry. You write one essay, you fill out a form. And that actually gave you an additional scholarship. What I learned later on was I was the only person who applied. So, you know, this is free money and free
but
opportunity.
They don't know about
sitting.
It, maybe.
They knew about it, but just nobody bothered to apply.
Why do you think that was? Maybe they didn't think they would get it?
Possibly, yeah. People don't take chances as much as you think.
That's why we're talking to you, exactly. Because then we can show them that you got to take a chance.
Yes, just take a chance. Just try it. And so I applied and I got the scholarship. And with that scholarship actually came an internship. So I was interning at one of the top five banks in the U.S. And at the end of that internship, I applied for and I was offered a full-time position.
And you took it.
And I decided to take it. Yeah. But I got the offer on the day that I was moving back to Trinidad and Tobago. And so I still moved back to Trinidad and then moved back to the U.S. once I had signed the offer and once everything was in place.
Wow. Sounds like a dream start. Was it?
It was. I mean, not without its challenges, but it was. Yeah. It was a good start. Yeah.
But it's a great lesson, because what you're saying to young girls and young women out there is you've got to take a chance, because it might be a no, but it might be a huge yes.
Absolutely.
So did you enjoy that role?
I did enjoy that role.
Was it in the small town?
It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. So it was
bigger.
In a bigger town. And I moved to Charlotte at that point, and I had a good life there. I had a good opportunity to buy my first property in Charlotte and sort of settle down.
You bought
there.
A house in America?
Yeah.
People can't even buy a house here. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, in those days, it wasn't that expensive. And in the U.S.
No, but it's still the mentality of it, right? To buy and become a homeowner.
Yes.
In a different country that's not yours.
And yes, yes.
So, right. I mean, a lot of women might have said, I'm not going to buy a house here because I don't see myself living here for the rest of my life. But you, was it an investment? How did you even think about buying a house back then?
I think it was just the thing to do. I thought, you know, why spend money on rent when your mortgage would be about the same. And there was a very low barrier to purchasing in those days. So in the US, it's nothing down to buy a house and then you get into a mortgage. So I think it was a bit of a different time than we live today, but it was quite easy. It was very easy.
But still, I don't know a lot of homeowners from that time. That
oh,
were
really?
Living in the U.S., but maybe because they were living in, you know, cities like New York and L.A., it's a little bit more expensive there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that was great. So you had your first investment. You know, we don't talk about money a lot amongst women, but that's a smart thing. You know, if you can invest in a house, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then you spend a lot of time working for that bank as a marketeer?
I spent a few years working for that bank, and then I moved. During that time, I got married and moved up to Chicago.
You married an American?
I married a Croatian guy.
A Croatian! That might explain why you're sitting here in Amsterdam with me later on.
Perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah, so we moved to Chicago. He was in Chicago doing his MBA at Loyola University there. And we had met at university, actually, the first week that I got to the U.S.
Ah.
So this was 3 or 4 years later, I got married and we then settled in Chicago.
Amazing. So everybody obviously wants to know how you went from a bank to, you know, in was it Chicago, North Carolina, Charlotte, to Amsterdam? How did that even happen? And we want to know everything about Elon Musk in the middle, because he's a hot topic right now. You cannot even think about not talking about him.
Okay, so I...
Because you worked for Tesla, right?
I worked at Tesla for 6 years prior to working at Lincoln Co. So that was... That experience in the automotive world was my entry point into Lincoln Co.
Yeah, because it's quite, you know, I mean, you can say what you want. It's a very innovative way that they launched Tesla. If we're talking marketing, it must have been new marketing methods, new, because I, for me, it just felt like it was all over the place, but it was a PR way that they were doing it, and it wasn't very much pushed. Do you know what I mean? It felt like a very smart, sort of seductive marketing. Am I saying too much?
No. So I, after living in Chicago for 5.5 years and working in marketing there, the last place I worked at was Hyatt Hotels in their headquarters. So that was a lot of fun. I moved to Amsterdam because my husband at the time got a role here in Amsterdam. And so we moved with our two little children who are now teenagers and settled in Amsterdam. And the first 2 years that I was in Amsterdam, I worked at Adidas in marketing, and that was a lot of fun. I worked on the Reebok side of the business in marketing, and I had, my client was Foot Locker. So
but
it
did
was a
you
big
have
account.
That job before you moved here? Or you,
absolutely.
You didn't
not.
Have a job at all. So you had to really find your own.
I found that job because someone, another marketing manager, who's now a good friend of mine, was going on maternity leave. And I decided to apply for that role. I got it. I got it on a Thursday. I had to start the Monday. So that was, you know, as a mom of two little children and not having childcare, it was a bit of a struggle. Oh, how do we do this? But eventually it all worked out.
Is that another advice that you can give to women? Just do it and then figure it out later?
Absolutely.
Because it prevents them from taking steps like this, right? Some women might have said, no, because I've got two small children and it seems like a big role.
Absolutely. So that Friday, we flew my mother-in-law in from Croatia. She arrived on the Saturday and took care of the kids for me for the next month until I could get them into the creche.
Ah.
So we were fortunate enough to be able to have her help. But I totally agree with what you're saying. Find a way to figure it out if you can. If you have the resources, you know, if you have people around you who you could lean on, then certainly do it if you have your career in mind and you want to get ahead.
And there's many more alternatives nowadays. I hear a lot of women who, you know, work with even, you know, older women, older ladies who just don't have a lot to do and want to spend time amongst people. And there's several solutions. There's tech solutions. There's so many ways of looking after kids and creating a community around your kids, right?
Absolutely.
I don't think the creche is the end all, you know.
No. And I think now the way that we work has also changed since COVID, right? In those days, there was no working from home. You had to be in the office. So, I mean, if you have the flexibility as well to be able to work a few days at home and or get what we call here an opas or a gastouder, which is a guest, sort of a guest parent in the Netherlands, go ahead and do it if you can afford it.
Yeah. I was listening to this podcast the other day, and this guy was saying how fatherhood is viewed upon as a plus for a man when he's got a career, but motherhood is not for a woman. So it feels like people find you more dependable if you're a father and you work in business, but less if you're a mother.
That's so interesting.
I know, isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Kind of shocking too.
Yes.
But it's true.
And from there, so from my Adidas career, then I moved to Tesla. And this is another point or another example of taking a chance. So I was looking for new positions because my team at Reebok were all moving to Switzerland, and that wasn't an option for me at the time. So I remember distinctly, it was a Saturday night, and I saw this role at Tesla for heading up the marketing team there in Europe. And I asked my husband at the time, who is Tesla? What is that? And because he's Croatian, he was, you know, very familiar with Nikola Tesla and hence the company. But I hadn't really heard of them. I'd heard of Nikola Tesla, of course, but not the company. And so I applied on a Saturday night thinking, they'll never call me. I don't have this experience. I don't have automotive experience. I don't know anything about running a European team. And they'll never call me. And they called me on the Monday morning.
So all of your limiting beliefs proved not to be true.
Exactly. It was an example where I almost didn't take the chance.
Yes.
But I took the chance, and they called me on the Monday. And, you know, I worked through the interview process, and which was quite grueling. But then they offered me the role, and I decided to take it.
Yeah.
And that, I think taking that role really put me into a different category because of, A, the challenges that company offered.
Well, I mean, personal, what were some of your biggest challenges then? As a, you know, if you're looking at it from personal growth.
Personal growth. So, you know, when I took the role, it was a team of four people, and which was great. But I had no idea. None of us had any idea at that point that Tesla would really become a household name in Europe and how big of a brand it would become. So in those days, we thought that we were just building up this little American car brand. We didn't know, we weren't 100% sure that the adoption of electric vehicles would really take off in the way that it has in Europe. And on top of that, just the role in itself, there were a lot of rules at Tesla in terms of, we didn't do performance marketing. We never spent a cent on advertising. So no. That in itself.
But it's like Apple, right?
Yeah, I think Apple does spend on advertising.
Not really in Europe. They did in America for a while,
yeah,
but it feels
perhaps,
like...
Yeah. But, you know, we were really, really, really strict about it. So yeah. There was $0 spent on advertising. And therefore, as a marketer, you really needed to challenge yourself to be creative in terms of how that money is spent and what are you going to do to attract a customer sitting in a small village outside of Lyon,
yeah,
in France. You know, oftentimes people say to me, you know, I thought Elon's Twitter was your marketing, you know, but that applies to a certain extent. It may apply to a customer sitting or potential customer sitting in London who, you know, whose first language is English. It doesn't so much apply to that German customer in his 60s who is sitting in a small village, in, you know, outside of Frankfurt. So we really, in those days, spent many days showing up in places where people really, and that's something that I experienced firsthand a lot of times, in my career there, where they had no idea. They'd never seen the car, never heard of the brand, and were very much in their minds far off from being attracted to any kind of electric vehicle. And it was our job to really educate. And so we led with more of a policy of education versus pushing hardcore sales.
Yeah. But I feel like that might have been a red thread throughout your life. Because if you look at what you've been doing coming over here, you're kind of also educating people on who you are. You had to do the same in America.
Yes.
You know, so do you feel like being this, maybe education could be also the connector, you know, because you're connecting to people in that way by educating them to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that also something, because, you know, nowadays, you kind of, there's a group of people who say, well, I don't need to educate you on who I am. You need to be informed, right? You need to inform yourself and look for the books yourself and educate yourself. But I kind of also like the part where education is actually a strategy.
Yes.
To connection.
Absolutely.
You know, you did it for your job and your role at Tesla, but it's kind of also the way that we're trying to connect with people.
Yeah.
And help them reach the next level.
Yeah. And one of the things that you and I talked about a bit at Amplify Her was the strategy behind keeping my accent as well.
Yeah.
You know, you asked me about that. And
because you've got a Caribbean accent. You don't sound American after all the... Because how long did you live in America?
11 years.
11 years. You would have thought you had an accent. Just, I mean, even Madonna had a British accent just after, what was it? two or three years being married to Guy Ritchie, and we all thought she became British. Which was kind of fun, but yes. You know, yeah, you kept your accent, and that was a strategy.
Yes, it was a strategic move, especially when I arrived in the US and I realized how heavy the tension was on the racial tension was there. It was easier for me to keep my accent and sort of remain as my own identity.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that, like you said, comes with a bit of explanation and education on who I am, where I'm from, what part of Africa that
they
country
thought,
is.
They thought that it was in Africa instead of the Caribbean.
Always.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yes. People would say to me, I know that. It's somewhere in Africa, right? And just remaining sort of who I am at heart versus trying to
fit in.
So that was definitely a strategy for me. But like you said, it does come with education.
And it works. And it's amazing because you just said it was a way for you to kind of stay close to who you are as a person, but also it was a way for you to distinguish yourself.
Yes.
You know, and get noticed, be visible, and
yes,
make sure that they know who Corinne is and say, hey, I want to give you that role instead of somebody else, because that's what we need to do, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I always say leaders have to be visible. Why would you otherwise follow them? So
yeah,
that's kind of a leadership strategy that you know, basically used back then, that you implemented.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me more about that, because I really ask women why it's so important to stay true to themselves, but also how they do that. So this is one way, you know, not losing the accent and making it part of you and maybe keeping you connected to the people at home, you know, the people in the Caribbean.
Definitely. You know, being from the Caribbean and coming from growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, I think is something that I really cherish. I loved my life in Trinidad, and I loved the experiences that I had when I was growing up, and I think they really made me who I am today.
So it wasn't like you were saying, okay, the West is better and we're just such a small beach, you know, because it could have been like that, because some people leave home and they never look back.
No, but I had a great life.
Yeah.
And so I had a great life there, and I really loved it. It's just, you know, a matter of opportunity.
What were some of the qualities that you, you know, brought with you from living there? You know, if you look at the life that they have in such a small country in on an island, what are the things that you're bringing with you, for instance, into the workplace?
What I try to bring with me is warmth, mm-hmm, and a lightness. I think we in the Caribbean tend to be quite happy people and quite fun-loving. And I try to make sure that I bring that with me. Particularly in our line of work, we are doing marketing. I mean, I think it would be very, very different if I was a brain surgeon, but we are doing marketing, which is so important. It's not, yeah. It is important, but it's not
the major, thing around.
Yeah, yeah, it's not going to save lives, right? So, you know, if we launch a campaign a day late, it's okay.
Yeah,
And that's the sort of grounding that I try
not
to
make
bring.
Everything a stressful situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's the fun and lightness.
Yes.
Which kind of brings people, you know, they come to work in a more joyous way then.
I hope so. Keep it real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So having worked, you know, you're from the Caribbean, you worked in two kind of big countries, because even though we're a small country, we're still a big country, yes. The Netherlands. In the way that we might not have a lot of square meters, but quite a big impact in the world, and I think that, you know, there is something that can be learned from that, you know, that you've lived in such a small country with not a lot of things that you have in the West, let's call it the West. What do you think is, you know, the one thing that you would love more people to know about living in a foreign country, you know? Because you moved around. Because let's say that somebody would offer you another role now to go and live in London or Paris. It might be a little bit less scary for you to say yes.
Absolutely. I moved to the Netherlands without ever having visited.
Yeah. So you didn't even know, but you did the research.
I researched, and the thing that I researched the most was how many rainy days there are.
No. That should have kept you from coming.
That was the weather was the thing that I was most worried about. But I think having moved a few times in the US and having moved in the first place to the US, moving to the Netherlands was a lot less scary.
I get it.
So I would say, you know, take the opportunity. I look at, you know, I also look at my parents now. My mom unfortunately has Parkinson's, so her mobility is a lot less now. And I think people today, or younger people today, I would say to them, don't wait to take opportunities.
Don't overthink it, maybe.
No.
Yeah.
You know, you want to open that Etsy shop, open it. Mm. You want to go live in Bali and be a digital nomad, this is the time to do it. If things don't work out there, you can always change course. Because later, you cannot wait till you retire to enjoy life.
And you cannot wait till the whole situation is perfect and to start it.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Things change, circumstances change, your health may change. Do it while you still can.
Yeah.
That's my
I love that
advice.
Belief.
Yeah.
So have you, you know, have some of your beliefs changed over the last years of, you know, being here in this new role at Lincoln Co. and...
I think my beliefs around ownership have definitely changed, and about the...
Because we don't own the cars.
Exactly.
I have a Lincoln Co., by the way.
You have a Lincoln
Co.
Yeah,
I don't own it.
Exactly.
I don't own it.
Yes, and it doesn't own you, as we like to say.
It's a great car, by the way.
Yeah, so we think... At Lincoln Co., we think, and I truly believe that people want to spend their money not so much on owning, you know, big expensive items anymore, other than maybe even not their house, their homes, but they want to spend that money on experiences and really living life. When I lived in Chicago, I would sit quite a lot in traffic. I felt like I spent half my time sitting in traffic jams, which was obviously very frustrating. And I moved to the Netherlands in 2011, like I said, where the idea of mobility is so different than from anywhere else.
We're all cycling here.
We're all cycling here. I think the availability of safe, reliable modes of public transportation and car sharing options meant that the need to permanently necessarily own a car, sort of faded away. And it's something that I think we're seeing in other industries as well, not just in the car industry. But it's definitely a mindset that I've had a change in over the past couple of years.
So let's talk about women, because we're doing this podcast to shine a light, to make a lot of, you know, rule breakers like yourself. You're kind of breaking the rules. I mean, you've worked in banking, you've worked in hospitality, and you've worked in mobility, as we like to call it, right?
Yes.
Is that the right marketing term for it? In two different countries. But you specialized as a marketeer. So, you know, I love to share these great new things that for me are kind of rule breaking. Because what you're doing here with Link & Go is kind of rule breaking. What you did in marketing is kind of rule breaking as well. Yes. But also you as a person are a rule breaker. So what do you think? A lot of the problems in the workplace for women are systemic. You know, what do you think is one of the biggest hurdle that women have to deal with?
I think one of the biggest hurdles that we have to deal with, obviously, is the pay gap.
Yeah.
You know,
have you encountered that problem yourself?
I haven't. It's really difficult to tell.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not
it's
always
not transparent
privy.
Here, yeah.
Exactly. You're not always privy to. But what I did experience as a hiring manager is that very often women undersell themselves when it comes to the salaries that they
demand
ask for or demand, and men oversell themselves. So, you know, in advising friends and other women who may be job hunting, I tend to advise them to go for as much as they possibly can, because men would go for 30% more than they are even asking.
Wow.
So that's what I've seen. At Link & Co, we do once per year a pay analysis where we compare the salaries of employees to make sure that we do not have a gender pay gap. We also have gender diversity goals across layers, and we're doing quite well, I would say, on that target. Today, our organization is 45% female, which is really unheard of in the car industry.
But is it on the top as well, at the top?
Possibly. It's. I think the average is about 15% in the automotive industry. So we are
much higher.
Yes, way above the average. We also have about 37% of women in managerial positions. So we do track this as well.
You're looking at it from the moment from recruitment, which is also the way that you are recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of the times women don't apply for these jobs because it doesn't appeal to them. So if you look at all the different steps, maybe, is that because you're a Swedish-owned company? Because it's Swedish-owned, and maybe because the Swedes have a little bit more experience with this.
Yeah, I think
than
the Swedes are quite advanced in terms of leading with equality, I would say, way more than other countries. But I think in general, we try to make sure that we have an open environment for all kinds of people.
It's about safety, right?
Yes. And we also stop looking at it from a male, strictly a male-female standpoint, because we do have actually non-binary people in our employment. So now we are changing the way that we use that those terms as well.
So how do you use them?
Well, we actually track female, male, and non-binary.
Okay.
So it could be somebody who's transgender or just non-binary as well. So
I love that. So that's a couple of steps that you're already taking here. You know, I was talking about being a rule breaker, but then I realized, do you even consider yourself being a rule breaker?
I do consider myself to be a rule breaker. I think there is no rule that says that I should not be where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, what are the odds?
Yeah, the odds are a little bit stacked against
yes,
you.
Yes, exactly. While I am forever grateful for all of the opportunities that I've received, I recognize that the odds of someone coming from a small town in Trinidad and Tobago, and then landing into leadership positions at both, let's say, Tesla and Lincoln Co. is a really special thing. And I'm super grateful for every opportunity that I've had, because I don't consider myself to be above and beyond in terms of, I'm certainly not always the brightest person in the room.
So it's already rule breaking that you're here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you ever have, did you feel like you were at a disadvantage because of the color of your skin, being a woman of color, or even, your gender?
I think about that sometimes, but I think given my career history, it would be disingenuous for me to sit here and say that I have been disadvantaged in any way. If it has happened, it's never been really obvious to me. However, that's not to say that things are always easy or that things fall into my lap. I think even with my qualifications and my experience, I've also struggled at times more than others to find a job or my next opportunity or the right opportunity. So, I remember when I was ready to leave Tesla, you would think, oh, I've just headed up the marketing team for this
huge company.
Innovative. Yeah. It was the number one innovative company at the time in Europe. And with all of this experience, I had, a master's degree in marketing. You would think that it would be way easier for me to find my next job.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
I would have thought they offered you this role easily.
It wasn't. It wasn't. It was at Lincoln Co. It went, very well. But it was difficult to find the next right role for me.
Yeah. So, let's make sure that people know it's not that easy. You still have to work for it.
You still have to work for it. Exactly.
So we're coming to the end of this podcast, and I want to ask you the question that I love asking at the end, which is, if you could turn back time, I'm trying to sing like Cher. If I could turn back time. Listen, if you would be able to turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell her? What was the biggest advice that you would give her?
I think it would be take every chance I could and do it now before it's too late.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that I would say to myself is, it will be okay.
It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Because you've got a smart head.
Yeah.
On top of your body. So what's your biggest ambition for the future?
My biggest ambition, I feel super guilty that I spend all of this time. I work quite a lot. I have two kids that I take care of. I have my home, and I just try to travel to back home when I can, or to travel the world. But I feel super guilty that I don't give back enough. So this year I'm focused more on giving back, yeah. Looking for some mentoring opportunities.
Well, I've got a mentor program. I'll be calling you soon.
Great.
Paying it forward. Yeah, that's 2023.
What I want to do in 2023.
That's a great, great way, or a great prospect to have. So yes. I loved having you here. Even though you invited me to this beautiful building. Thank you, Corinne. I think we should be hearing more from you, hopefully in the future. Thank you so much for inviting me here to the beautiful building of Lincoln Co. in Amsterdam. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.